welcome to the Buckmaster Show. Hello, everybody. It's Wednesday, March 14th, 2012, and I am Bill Buckmaster, your host on the Buckmaster Show on KVOI, The Voice, and The Voice Network stations, KJAA, AM 1240 in Globe, and our friends in Douglas listen to us in Cochise County on KAPR, AM 930. Try to make this very convenient for you. If you cannot listen on the radio, you can stream the show live on my website, buckmastershow.com, and at kvoi.com. And if you miss the program, we make it easy for you to hear the program anywhere, anytime in the world by going to buckmastershow.com and tucsonsentinel.com and tucsoncitizen.com. We are live Monday through Friday, noon to 1. We will get things rolling with a newsmaker interview with Ramon Valadez, chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. 30 minutes past the hour, the Buckmaster Show historian Ken Scoville will be joining us. He'll be discussing that op-ed piece that he had in the Arizona Daily Star about his concerns for the future of historic buildings in relation to the modern streetcar. Then, is Arizona housing too many nonviolent criminals? And if so, what's it costing the taxpayers? We'll talk with a principal researcher with the Grand Canyon Institute. That comes up at 45 minutes past the hour. You, our listeners, are always encouraged to be part of this program. It's a very simple process. You call us on the Buckmaster Show live line, 790-2040, and we put you on the air with your question, comment, or concern for Ramon Valadez. He will be delighted to field any and all questions today. You can email your questions at buckmastershow.com or submit them using the Buckmaster Show Facebook page. Now only about 30 friends short of 2,000, so we're real happy about that. Soon to hit 2,000. We begin now with Ramon Valadez, Chair, Pima County Board of Supervisors. Chairman Valadez, good to see you.
Good to see you, Bill. Thank you for the invitation to join you.
Well, it's always good to see you. And let's begin with Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry's call to this program, to the Buckmaster Show, on Friday, issuing a challenge to State Representative Terry Proud. Ms. Proud is, as you know, Ramon Valadez, she is the author of legislation that, if passed, would really change the future of bonding in Pima County. It would create a separate bonding board. Bonding, Mr. Huckleberry says, would never be the same.
No, actually, it wouldn't be. It would do away with our bond program for Pima County. Every community in Pima County has really benefited from bonding in our community, whether it's open space, parks, sewer, transportation, different community projects, housing, community reinvestment, you name it. And if you take a look at the geographic span of that benefit, it is our entire community. Now, what 2656 does is it creates a six-member panel, which has the ability to veto any bond before it even goes to the voters.
And who's on the panel?
On the panel is a representative from Pima County, a representative from Marana, Tucson, South Tucson, Sahuarita, and Oro Valley. Now, here's the interesting part of that whole kind of discussion is that if three of those, and this was a point that Howie Fisher brought up in his original article, if, for example, Marana, Oro Valley, and Sahuarita got together, they represent 10% of the population in Pima County.
How about the people who live in unincorporated areas?
The people who represent, they would have no representation, and that is about 36% of the population.
So they then have no say in a bond election.
Correct. Correct. And here's the irony, Bill. If you take a look at the sponsorship list, Proud's district is 66.6% unincorporated. Senator Antonori's district, 55.9% unincorporated. Representative Williams, 66.5% unincorporated. And the supervisorial district he is running for is 71.3% 3% unincorporated.
Which is the district I live in. That's supervisorial district number one, representing the Catalina foothills. And you're saying that's over 70%.
71.3% unincorporated. So a couple of the other sponsors, Ted Vogt, 55.9% unincorporated. Representative Stevens and Judd, 60% unincorporated. This is the sponsorship list, and these are the people that would go unrepresented on the bond committee based on this legislation.
Let's cut to the bottom line. Isn't this Marana being upset with Pima County?
Absolutely. What has happened is that this is one community, and if you take a look at the resolution the board passed, every community, every mayor has come out against it or expressed concerns about it. Most of the chambers have done it. Most of the big businessmen and organizations, SALC, has come out against it. Other than Marana, there is no one that wants this to happen. Ironically, Bill, we've made it really clear. If 2656 passes, there will be no bond program. And guess who one of the worst hurt communities will be?
Tell me.
Marana.
Oh, okay. Ramon Valadez with us, the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. We're talking about House Bill 2656, sponsored by Terry Proud. By the way, Mr. Huckleberry has agreed. We've set a date for that event, but it might change, so I won't give the date out specifically, because we've also extended an invitation, of course, to Representative Terry Proud to debate the this whole issue of this creating a separate bonding board. And I wonder, Supervisor, if this were to pass, what does that do to this future of this bond, proposed bond concerning Raytheon?
Well, frankly, we've made it really clear. This passes, there is no bond. It's black and white. The truth of the matter is, if you take a look at economic development and what we're proposing to do with Raytheon and the economic development incentives or program that we've developed, we've got that out to small businesses, large businesses. We're trying to get feedback on it right now. It'll be back before the board in about April of this year.
Yeah, this is the Pima County Bond Advisory Committee. We had Larry Hecker,
right,
who heads that group, on the program, talking about that his committee is considering a bond election that would ask voters to approve $200 million for Raytheon-related infrastructure and economic development projects. This is something that Raytheon feels very strongly about.
No, absolutely. It's if you take a look at the part of the reason we didn't get the contract here, and Huntsville got it, was because we didn't have a buffer with the old the Hughes Access Road, which in the proposal calls for us to extend that buffer so that won't be an issue going into the future. It also tries to it's identified some issues in terms of what Huntsville and other communities have done to be successful using their anchor employer economic development driver like Raytheon to bring more business, more jobs, more good paying positions to our community. I mean, Bill, one of the problems is that you're absolutely right. I'm here basically, we've kept quiet, assuming that the facts would speak for themselves. And I've got to tell you that facts don't matter to the legislature. We've gone up there, we've presented the facts, and so now today I'm here to give that message to your listeners and ask them to then go to their legislators and tell them to back off Pima County.
Yeah, because they're not listening to your lobbyist who goes up there, he's been spending a lot of time up there and being, I understand, kind of disked, as they say, not getting the most respect from the lawmakers.
Well, I'll tell you what, they listen, but they don't hear. And so the only... When I was in the legislature, Bill,
served in the House of Representatives and the State Senate.
Right. What happened back then is it was the Maricopa County legislators who would always complain about Pima County. And while you didn't like it, you understood it. They weren't from here. They didn't have the ability to pick up the phone and talk to people. They couldn't learn. What we're seeing today is a repetition of opinion so many times that it then becomes fact in some people's eyes. So that when I'm very fond of saying that fact, data, history, and science don't matter in the Arizona legislature because they don't. They won't listen, and the only people they're going to listen to are the people that they are represent. So what I'm asking your listeners today is call, email, write, contact your legislators, tell them to back off Pima County, and frankly, to stop taking opinion as fact because it is not.
You're saying it right now. You're saying two words, aren't you? Back off.
Correct.
I mean, this is really, and it's not just House Bill 2656, which creates a separate bonding board. There are other pieces of legislation. There's one dealing with local control over the proposed Painted Hills development, water control in the Tucson Mountains. There's one that would allow electronic billboards on state highways. Those signs are banned right now in Tucson and unincorporated Pima County.
Correct, Bill. It's frankly, we're at a tipping point. We are at a tipping point. If you take a look at even our bond program is not the board or supervisor saying we're going to assess a tax. Our bond program is the voters of Pima County standing up and saying we want this program. The legislature, and now it's the legislators from Southern Arizona that are the ones that are doing this to Pima County and to our community. They are trying to dismantle everything that we have successfully done over the last 20 and 30 years. Bill, one of the things they're complaining about is transparency. I just showed you an article from the Arizona Republic that gives our website, the Pima County website, an A- in transparency. Nowhere on that list is the state of Arizona. None of the school boards, just Pima County.
Yeah, I've got that right in front of me here, that transparency, your website ranked very high. What was it, an A or A?
A-.
A-. Ramon Valadez is with us, Pima County Board of Supervisors Chair, and of course the knock has been on Mr. Huckleberry. He's too powerful. Let's talk a little bit about that when we continue with Ramon Valadez, who is Chair of the Board of Supervisors, and we'll get into this whole thing. Is Mr. Huckleberry too powerful? That as we continue with the Buckmaster Show.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Even the highest efficiency washing machine won't make your laundry soft and bright if you have hard water. It's the same for your dishwasher with spotted glasses. So why not call the Culligan man? Culligan now has a high-efficiency water softener that virtually eliminates hard water problems throughout your entire home. Your laundry is brighter and softer, glasses and shower doors are spot-free, and soaps and detergents last longer. Plus, it saves you up to 46% in water, salt, and energy. So if you're looking for ways to end hard water problems and save money around the house, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener works wonders. In fact, it makes all of your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer. Thanks to Culligan, 100% satisfaction guarantee, your future, your home, and your laundry are guaranteed to be brighter. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Two of the world's largest pharmaceutical giants, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, know where bio works. It works at Innovation Park in Oro Valley, one of the 10 best towns for families, according to Family Circle magazine. Bioscience and bioindustry working together at Innovation Park with 275 acres of inspiring environment ready for biodevelopment. Learn more about where bio works at innovationparkaz.com. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for fresh and healthy pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is handcrafted using the finest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore's award-winning wood-fired pizzas, certified authentic by the world-renowned Verace Pizza Napolitana Academy, is pizza perfection. Vero Amore, North Swan at Camp Lowell, and in Marana at Dove Mountain, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com and on Facebook.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Ever notice how much time you spend just getting where you want to go? Travel hassles, long drives. Expensive parking can all ruin your trip and create a miserable experience. Tucson International Airport has the answer. With close, easy parking, quick check-in, a short walk to your gate, and airport amenities that make traveling stress-free and enjoyable. With nonstop destinations and connections around the world, for business or for pleasure, fly TucsonAirport.com. It's the way to go.
It's 12:22 on the Buckmaster Show. Ramon Valadez is chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. If you'd like to comment on anything that he has said so far, 790-2040. He's been saying very passionately this afternoon that, and he's been urging the lawmakers, especially those from Pima County and the Tucson area, please back off this attack on Pima County. And we've been talking about HB 2656 that would change the bonding, the way it's done here. Representative Terry Proud is sponsoring that. And one of the complaints Representative Proud has, Ramon Valadez, is that Chuck Huckleberry is just too powerful and that the board, you and your colleagues on the board, are rubber stamping whatever Mr. Huckleberry says.
Well, I would tell you that as chairman of the board, I can without a doubt tell you that the Chuck reports to me and to my four colleagues. And in order to act in any way, shape, or form, he needs at least three of us to do it because he is an extension of the board and he does work for the board. And if you take a look and read your statute and your constitution and the way things are done, which I'm sure wasn't done, you'd understand that Chuck, you know, the perception may be that he's powerful. The truth is that he works for the board. The truth is that he, in order to do anything, he has to have three votes.
Terry Proud is also very upset, saying that the projects and the bonding going back to 1997 just don't get completed in Pima County.
Well, Bill, here again is someone offered her an opinion. She's repeated it so much, she's taken it as fact. The real fact is that in the 2004 and 2006 election authorizations, 96% of those projects have already been completed as represented by voters. In the 1997 issuance, of the 118 projects authorized, 105 have been completed. Obviously, there's been some changes because some projects weren't necessary after a certain time. She's also made the point that debt is out of control in Pima County. Well, let me tell you what the debt is. The debt in Pima County per capita is $1,016. Now, let's take Marana's debt. Now, remember, most of this debt is not voter approved. It's $1,886 per person in Marana. So there's a little bit of disparity. But, you know, let's go a little bit further. Let's go up to Maricopa County. If we look at the debt in Phoenix, and remember they've got 3.2, 3.8 million people, their per capita debt is $4,500. City of Mesa, almost $3,000 per capita. City of Scottsdale, $4,700 per capita. And Pima County, again, now that you've heard those numbers, $1,016 per capita. Now, I think maybe they're looking in the wrong place. And frankly, this is just a little bit of a vendetta coming back from...
Does it go back to the sewer treatment dispute with Marana?
It does.
Is that what's at the heart of this?
It does, Bill, and that's the problem. They've made allegations that are opinion. They've never offered fact. And some of our legislators have taken that off and said, you know what, we don't like Pima County. We're going to go against them. I'll tell you what, one of the allegations she's made is that we move monies around. And I know that came from Marana. I've read it. Let me read you the title of Ordinance Number 2004-18, an ordinance of the Pima County Board of Supervisors of Pima County, Arizona, adopting the bond implementation plan for May 18, 2004 special bond election. No modification of jurisdictional bond projects unless requested by the jurisdiction. What that means, Bill, is that the jurisdiction has got to request the change. It can't even originate from the board or the county.
The caller who just called in but didn't want to go on the air, why are you comparing Pima County to municipalities in terms of debt rather than comparing it to other counties in Pima County?
Thank you for making that point. Part of the reason I'm doing that is because Pima County is very unique in the western states. Because, as we talked about earlier, roughly 36% of the population is unincorporated, and we have to provide urbanized services for them. And our communities in Pima County are not big enough and haven't reached a nexus point where they can bond themselves. Many of the things that we do, if you look at the maps that we've talked about earlier, they're dispersed throughout the entire incorporated and unincorporated areas, so that it is fairer to compare the overall debt of the jurisdictions along with the county, not just compare us to the counties. Other counties in Arizona don't have an significant unincorporated population. Maricopa County has over 30, I think at this point over 40 jurisdictions. Those cities and municipalities deal with the issues that Pima County is dealing with for Pima County. So it's very different in comparing us to other counties. There's no other county in Pima County or in Arizona that has 36% of its population in unincorporated Pima County.
Everyone's complaining about the roads, but if we do not do any bonding and if this new board is created, what do you have to say to people who want their roads fixed?
Well, there again, Bill, we talked about it the last time. We are trying to do our part and step forward, and we're looking for resources locally to be able to do something. But the truth of the matter, the blame belongs squarely on the legislature. Over the last several years, they have taken swept monies from the Highway User Revenue Fund, which is the gas tax we all pay into. We all pay into it for what? For pavement preservation for our streets and our roads.
And what are we getting out of it?
Well, I'll tell you what. We have funded the Department of Public Safety for the last 5 years. Over the last year, the legislature not only swept the amount of money that we got, they also are funding the Motor Vehicle Division, which should be a self-funding department. Part of the problem is they're looking for problems here. They're not looking at solving the problems there. My recommendation is when I was a legislator and I had a structural problem in terms of how we fund the operations government, we figured it out. We didn't go and take everybody else's money and then point the finger and said that you're wrong. And we're going to force you to raise taxes. We're going to force you to raise your revenues. And we're not going to do a doggone thing.
Ramon Valadez has been with us here on the Buckmaster Show, the first half hour of the show on this Wednesday afternoon. So your message again to the lawmakers?
Back off. Back off, especially when it comes to things like 2656. Look, it was the voters of Pima County that approved these bonds. It was the same voters that are going to vote or not vote for you come November.
Ramon Valdez with us on the Buckmaster Show. Stay with us. We'll be talking about historic preservation and the modern streetcar. Ken Scoville will be joining us. Ramon Valdez, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Bill.
And have a great afternoon.
You too.
All right. Stay with us. More to come on the Buckmaster Show.
SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. A jury has found Virginia Tech negligent for delaying a campus warning of the first shootings in a 2007 campus massacre that left 33 people dead. A wrongful death civil suit was brought by the parents of two students who were killed. Jurors awarded $4 million to each family in the state, immediately filed a motion to reduce the award. NATO officials have approved a plan that's aimed at reducing the risk of an attack on alliance soldiers by Afghan security forces. A man who police say stabbed four people at an office building in Columbus, Ohio, has been shot by a police officer. Police say three of the stabbing victims are in critical condition, as is the suspect. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 13 points, the Nasdaq currently unchanged. More details at srnnews.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of healthcare in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Everyone's piling on big banks nowadays, with good reason. But still, you're skeptical about moving your money. We get it. But let's think about that. If you're worried about convenience, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has local branches and thousands of fee-free ATMs nationwide. If you're worried about service, at Pyramid, you're a member. At big banks, you're a number. There's a difference. And if you're worried about savings, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has better rates and fewer fees than big banks. Like our great low 4.5% APR on new, used, or refinanced vehicle loans with terms up to 60 months. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options. So Pyramid wins on convenience, service, and savings. If you're still skeptical about moving your money, try us out. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Visit PyramidFCU.com to learn how. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, 1234 on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice and the Voice Network stations listening to us in Globe and in Douglas. 790-2040, 790-2040 is the Buckmaster Show live line. And joining us now is our contributor on local history, Ken Scoville, who is a native Arizonan. He has been a teacher in Tucson, still is for many years, and he's written extensively on Tucson's history. Ken recently had an op-ed piece in the Arizona Daily Star voicing his concerns about the impact of the modern streetcar on some of Tucson's historic buildings. Ken, good to see you.
Hi, Bill. Great to see you.
Yeah, it's not that you're against the modern streetcar project.
No, not at all. In fact, at first glance, it looks like a logical fit to bring back a mode of transportation that used to actually be there. Like I was chatting with you, we used to have mule trolleys going out to the university at the turn of the century, and then in 1906 we got electric trolleys.
But you are concerned about, well, why don't you voice what is it that you are concerned about?
Well, reference to what I said in the editorial is the city has always been a pro-development stance, even to the point of really being negative about the resources we have. And I'm afraid that the streetcar is being used as another ploy, just like in past times, Rio Nuevo, and even farther back, urban renewal, that they're using this as an excuse for these drastic rezonings. And what I mean by drastic, the two 14-story towers at Campus Acquisition, who's a Chicago developer that does excellent, looks like student housing projects, came in about a year ago, and the city essentially gave them everything they did. And the most troubling thing that it ties in with the streetcar is that the city is saying, well, we need ridership on the streetcar. Well, you would want to put buildings at either the end or the start of the streetcar, not right across the street from the University of Arizona, where those buildings are just south of Speedway. So they might ride down to go Fourth Avenue shopping once in a while, but they're not going to need to use the streetcar.
Ken Scoville is with us, a historian, and Ken, you say there have been three major ploys, you say, over the last 50 years to justify the destruction of many historic resources in this city.
That's correct. And just very quickly for your audience, back in the 1950s, the city had a proposal to destroy 350 acres of downtown, almost everything that you see from Armory Park to the Temple of Music and Art to everything down there. Finally, there was money available through urban renewal in the early 60s, and 79 acres were designated for destruction. And people aren't aware that we had viable businesses, great buildings. Errol Sherrill on Broadway was a wonderful business, the Plaza Theater, and they begged the city council, can we stay where we are? We have great businesses. Everybody had to go.
Now, was that the sweep that resulted in the Tucson Convention Center?
That's where the Tucson Convention is.
So originally you're saying in the 1950s that was to be a 350-acre
project,
and it was eventually scaled down to 79 acres, but it did take quite a few historic structures.
Mansions, great buildings. In fact, obviously, I'm probably researched it more than most people. Even buildings that were out of stone, they almost had to use dynamite. But what the city did with all its publications, they showed the buildings that obviously couldn't be saved, tried to present it in a very narrow scope, but then El Charro, great businesses, everything would be swept away.
So that was one of the major
problems. Right. The next one, closest to most of it, is Rio Nuevo, where we thought we were going to really help downtown, and I was a great supporter of it.
Yeah, you were on board early with Rio Nuevo.
And from 1999 when it got surpassed by the citizens. But as we all know, money was wasted. Projects were totally not designated to be elected. And now we have the streetcar, and the big banner with that is we have to put densities in along the streetcar route, and that's true. But you don't put them at areas where the students aren't going to need to ride it.
Talk a little bit about, Ken Scoville, this campus acquisitions project at Speedway and Park. We had Vice Mayor Karen Ulick on the program last week. And Ken, I believe Karen was the only vote against.
Yes, she was the one dissenting vote
against
this project. And through this whole process, I would have to give Karen a lot of kudos for supporting and having concerns. But and she tried to say the historic buildings that are going to be impacted in this transition zone, which are part of the West University Historic District, she said, why do those need to be in? They currently have height overlays that you can build up maybe 200, 300 feet over those. And the city said, well, we're trying to protect the property rights of the people that currently have them because they may be in the shadows of the new buildings. But the way everything's been placed, it's for maximum density and maximum profit and not necessarily a new good neighbor for the neighborhood.
The campus acquisitions project, so that has now the council has said yes to this, but it's not the end of the story.
No, they've given final approval to this. And again, two 14-story towers at just south of Speedway between Park and Euclid. But there's an interesting process that's going on. This is all approved. And one other thing I need the listeners to know, that through this whole process, while the community and citizens were still giving input, the city of Tucson was approving the plans for the developer before they even got the rezoning, which I have not seen that happen before. Well, the West University and the other historic districts are so concerned to where the city is moving on all this that they're actually referring this back to the citizens of Tucson to be voted and decided on a process called a referendum. And if they need to get about 10,000 signatures, then it will actually go to the ballot in this fall. The one other thing that I find interesting is we know this is our centennial year. And people sometimes say, well, this referendum, this sounds very suspicious. This got put in our state constitution in 1912, initiative, referendum, and recall. And referendum is really about if people are not happy with a decision that's made by any government body across the street, you can go get signatures. There's a formula of how many signatures you need, and people can actually vote about.
Yeah, this is not been used that much, the referendum?
Well, it has been used a fair amount, not so much in Tucson. Well, the last times, well, we've used recall a lot. We want
yes.
to have a lot of interesting, colorful folk in Tucson, but referendum, not too much. So they've done a couple rezonings that were in Moran, as I remember, and maybe the town of Oro Valley. The interesting thing about all of this is that the city has not been representing all the people in this process. And this is what the result is with the referendum.
You made the statement that this project also has the potential to demolish, what, more than half a dozen historic?
Probably about nine historic buildings that have been in the historic district for almost 30 years.
And what kind of buildings are we talking about?
These are called bungalows. These are turn-of-the-century bungalows.
Are those the ones that have some of the timber and the stone mix?
Some of them have timber and stone. Others are masonry. But they just add to the fabric and flavor of what the neighborhood is all about.
I think the concern is that you would have a huge, well, 13, 14-story building right next to a historic structure. And
There's several issues. First of all, it's obviously out of scale. And the second of all, the shade issues, that they'll never get sunlight and all these things. And a perfect compromise would be put the two towers no taller than what the Marriott Hotel that's already there, realizing that 14 stories is taller than any building on the U of A campus. And you could position them so where if you made a plaza in between those buildings and the historic resources that are closer to Euclid, both could coexist. But the city wants all the rest of that block for high rise also.
So where does the referendum process go from here?
Referendum process, I think they've got another 18 days to get signatures. I think they only need 8,500, but the nature of the process, they probably want to get about 14,000 signatures. Then they'll be checked for validity. They have to be residents of Tucson to sign this, and their petitioners all around at different events and the libraries. Then if they're valid enough and they met the requirements, they will go for a vote in the fall.
I think it's interesting that you put this in historic perspective over the last 50 years, that this is really the third of these kind of destruction of many historic resources. So you wonder, what about learning lessons?
Oh, well, those of us
do
that don't...
Do we ever learn
it's
lessons?
It's sort of a cliche that those that don't know the past will relive it. But,
yeah.
But it's always been disconcerting to me, the fact that people are making decisions at the council and all these things, and they don't spend a little reflective time to say what worked in the past, what didn't work. And if you look around the United States, I was just looking at the Money magazine, and they're saying the 100 top cities in the country. And you can see every one of those cities has an historic component and a sense of place to it. And the city of Tucson was not on the list for the top 100 cities to move to.
You've been doing downtown walking tours. Downtown is coming back, isn't it?
The best thing that I always tell people downtown, especially from a restaurant and sort of unique retail,
yes,
it's harder to find a parking spot.
It is.
And the good old days, I could always find it. I go to my favorite place and they go, somebody's took my parking spot.
But the restaurant scene is really
restaurant scene is great,
booming downtown, and it's good to see that private investment is actually leading. I guess public
it is leading the way. And the irony is, those towers should have been downtown, because that's where the destination would be. Students would get on every day and take that the modern streetcar to the campus, and that would have helped the revitalization for downtown. And that was the original plan for this. This kind of density would be downtown to support downtown and ridership. But this is purely a what we call a target zoning to give somebody in, came into town, our newest developer, Carpetbagger, to use another historic term, and they said, you can have the farm. It's a wonderful location to put students in. It's a great one, but it won't make them ride the streetcar.
Okay, Ken Scoville, historian, Buckmaster Show contributor on local history. It's always a pleasure to see you, Ken. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Coming up now on 12:45 on the Buckmaster Show, are there too many nonviolent folks behind bars in Arizona? And if so, what's it costing us, the taxpayers? We will explore that question next as we continue with the Buckmaster Show.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Everyone is switching to high-efficiency appliances because they have money, and a Culligan high-efficiency water softener does the same. But did you know that you can rent rather than buy? Think about it. No equipment to pay for upfront, money-saving purchase options if you change your mind, and service calls are included in the rental rate. In fact, you'll never have to pay for another water softener, ever. So now you can get all the benefits of soft water for less when you rent from Culligan. Imagine a spot-free home, softer skin, and brighter laundry for dollars a day. Even better, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy, plus helps all your appliances last longer. Let your Culligan man take care of your water when you rent the world's most efficient water softener. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
With 275 acres of stunning environment, Innovation Park in Oro Valley is ready for development. Already, two of the world's largest pharmaceuticals, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, are settled in Innovation Park. Innovation Park, a great place to do business in Oro Valley, named one of the 10 best towns for families by Family Circle magazine. Find out more at innovationparkaz.com. Noble Hops Gastro Pub is for people who revere their beer and their food. Noble Hops specializes in high-quality, delicious food and offers an impressive, ever-changing selection of handcrafted beers from around the world with more than 24 on tap. Noble Hops, a pub for foodies at the southeast corner of La Canada and Lambert in Oro Valley, and always on the web at noblehopspub.com and on Facebook.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencium and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Support for Buckmaster comes in part from Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. You can find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. And remember, they're having a book signing there on Saturday, March 24th from 10 a.m. to noon at Splendido. And Splendido will be hosting Christina Taylor's mother, Roxana Green, who was on our program yesterday. She'll be signing her book, As Good As She Imagined. Too many nonviolent offenders are stuck behind bars in Arizona. That's the conclusion of a recent report from the Grand Canyon Institute. Joining us is Dave Wells, a fellow for the Institute. Mr. Wells, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Bill.
Tell me about this report. The report was titled Reducing Incarceration While Maintaining Public Safety, From Truth in Sentencing to Earned Release for Nonviolent Offenders.
Right. Yeah, Arizona is the only state in the country that applies truth in sentencing, which was a movement in the 1990s to try to get people who commit felonies to spend almost all their time behind bars. And that's fine for violent felonies, and there are about 30-some states that have applied that. But Arizona is the only state that applies it to nonviolent offenders as well, which means regardless of their risk, regardless of any kind of rehabilitation they may undertake in prison, they're forced to spend at least 85% of their sentence behind bars.
Who are these nonviolent offenders?
Well, a lot of them have drug issues or alcohol issues. And they say, but they haven't. Arizona in 1996 passed sort of a groundbreaking law where, for the first two times that you're caught using an illegal drug, you get treatment. But the challenge is that a lot of people get engage in drug-induced crime. So you might, for instance, burglarize a home in order to get money for your drug habit. And so that's an example of a nonviolent felony, assuming they don't have any kind of an armed weaponry or anything like that, that somebody might be convicted of. And some people are in jail because, they've also they've peddled drugs as part of their habit. And so these are some of the folks who are behind bars. But very few of them actually get treatment. The Arizona Department of Corrections estimates that at least 75% of the people they take on intake have significant drug or substance abuse histories, and yet only about they had about 18,000 people who entered the DOC last year, and only about 1,800 of them actually got treatment. And so, as a consequence, a lot of them are released from prison, and they still have the same substance abuse issues they had when they came in. So they often repeat the same crime.
Are our funding the way we fund, when you look at the universities, the three state universities received 40% more funding 10 years ago from the general fund than did the Arizona Department of Corrections. Today, that's reversed, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one of the more stunning things for people to realize, because we never voted for saying, oh, we definitely want to give more money to prisons and less money to universities. But that's the way our laws are carried out right now, on top of the major financial crisis the state had. Because if you have very rigid sentencing requirements, you're not able to, you just can't release prisoners. You have to have a system for that, whereas they can just cut university funding and force tuition through the roof. And that's what they've done. They have literally cut university funding. It's actually less money is going to universities today than was 10 years ago, whereas the Department of Corrections gets 75% more money than they did 10 years ago. And so what we're identifying is a group of folks who we think Arizona's lawmakers really need to look at as possibly helping to basically reduce the rate of increase in incarcerations in Arizona and save the state money. The main idea would be to do something which is called earned release programs. Currently, if for good behavior and following vocational activities and other things, inmates can get one day released from their sentence, often into community supervision for every 6 days they serve, and that's the 85%. A lot of other states, like Washington State, use about a 50% rate, so that for every day that they serve, they can get a one-day release. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they'd be released to the public. free of charge after half the time is served, but they could be put into something called community supervision, which essentially which is parole, where they would have to be abide by whatever requirements are imposed upon them. But that's much less costly, and it's much more cost effective, and it shows that in most cases that you don't have any issues related to additional crime from it. So it maintains public safety, but it's much cheaper because it costs $20,000 a year to keep somebody behind bars, but only roughly about $4,500 a year if we include drug treatment to put them into some kind of community supervision.
We're speaking with Dave Wells, PhD. Dr. Wells, he is a fellow at the Grand Canyon Institute. Dr. Wells, explain the Grand Canyon Institute. What kind of work do you do up there?
Well, the Grand Canyon Institute was formed last year by a number of folks who have been looking at policy in Arizona, and we've realized that the policy in Arizona has been much more ideologically driven, that they have an idea of what they want to do regardless of what the consequences are because it's what their ideology wants. And we thought that we should have more of a evidence-based centrist approach to policy in Arizona. So a number of people came together, including from the Tucson area. Two of the people who are on our board are George Cunningham, who's the chair of our board, as well as Pete Hirschberger, who used to serve in the legislature from the Tucson area. But since the bipartisan board has both Republicans and Democrats on it, but what we share in common as a nonprofit entity is trying to use evidence-based research to try to move the public dialogue forward in a way that can be addressing fiscal issues for the state as well as trying to improve the state's economic growth.
You know, Dave, when I've had Barbara LaWall, Pima County attorney, and others, we had the attorney from Pinal County also talking about this issue, and they say there's good reason why these people are behind bars. Let's don't release them. What do you say to that?
And there may be good reasons for them to be behind bars, but it doesn't mean they need to be behind their bars for 85% of their sentence when they're nonviolent offenders. Again, the people that we targeted in this particular report, we used the Department of Corrections and the prosecuting attorney's own report in terms of their classification of folks. We didn't use our own classification. So we're only identifying folks who are nonviolent felons who the Arizona Department of Corrections has labeled as either low risk, very low risk, or ultra low risk of recidivism, meaning likelihood of committing another crime. And I think it's important to give people like that an incentive to improve their lives. And you can think that if you can reduce your time behind bars by 50% as opposed to 15%, it's a much bigger incentive for people to be involved in vocational programs, to successfully complete drug treatment. Because there's a lot of things that can happen to help make them get their lives straightened out. Because I think the bottom line for us is we don't want to see people revolving back into the prison system. We want to see them serving their sentence and then being released into the community and becoming productive members of our society. And this is a group that we think is most possible for that to happen, and the state can save the most money if they did it.
What kind of money can we save, Dave?
Well, we estimate, again, depending on how it's structured and who's eligible and so forth, that the state could save anywhere from $30 million to $73 million a year. Which, again, is not hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, but given a state that's currently in really tight circumstances fiscally in terms of its ability to meet the needs that people want, that's freeing important resources up that could be allocated to other areas, whether it's helping to make sure that children can get after-school daycare for low-income families or trying to make sure that there's greater access to access or other kinds of things that can really be quite important. And I think that's the key thing, is we want to be as efficient with our tax money as we possibly can. And that's why it's important, I think, for folks to revisit this issue. And again, it doesn't have to mean that we're simply releasing people. We're moving people probably with a lesser sentence and then allowing them, if they've met all the requirements, to be under community supervision, where they're going to be still have to report in. Sometimes they'll have these ankle bracelets so they can be tracked. There's lots of things that's done, but there's a lot of evidence that shows that if you do these things, you can still keep the crime rate down while saving a lot of money.
Dave Wells, Dr. Dave Wells, a fellow with the Grand Canyon Institute, and it's the first time we have talked with someone from the Grand Canyon Institute. It is a moderate voice, and it's you say it's been about a year since its formation, Dave?
Yeah, we were filing. You're getting ready to file our 501c3 paperwork and things like that about a year ago this time, and we went officially public at the end of May. The first report that we did It came out in the very beginning of June about unemployment, extended unemployment benefits, and that was where Arizona, by simply changing one word, two to three, in a formula that was calculated by the federal government, we could have allowed people to receive the 80 to 100 weeks of extended unemployment benefits, and we put out a report that said that would have been a good idea for the state and the economic benefits to the state for that. That came out just before the special session that Governor Brewer called in June.
Dave Wells, Ph.D. from the Grand Canyon Institute, thank you very much. And folks can get more information at grandcanyoninstitute.org. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you very much, Dave. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Coming up now on 59 minutes past the hour on The Buckmaster Show. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at Flowers Rieger, that's RIEGER.com. Flowers & Rieger is the CPA firm of The Buckmaster Show, and that will do it today for the Wednesday, the midweek edition of The Buckmaster Show. We will be back tomorrow. State School Superintendent John Hoopenthal will be our leadoff guest. Mike Fader will be with us from the Tucson Padres talking about the Humane Society's Adopt-a-Thon, and then Jack Chalom will be talking with us about nutrition. Have a great afternoon.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR Douglas and 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.